Okay, let's just jump right in. It is Sunday, February 1st, 2026. And if you're anything like me, you've spent the last month just enjoying this quiet January.
It was a nice little break.
It was. Catching up on the backlog, maybe actually finishing a game for once,
Huh?
feeling pretty good about my
A
finances.
deceptive lull, honestly.
Exactly. Because you look at the calendar today, and then you look at this release schedule we have, and that piece is just, it's over. The giants are waking up. And looking at this forecast from Majid, the one he calls the wallet-crushing month, I think we need to have a serious talk, a sort of intervention, before anyone makes a financial mistake.
Intervention is the right word because we're not just talking about a lot of games. We're talking about massive 50-plus hour commitments just dropping back to back. So the central tension of this deep dive isn't just which game is good. It's that classic brutal battle of time versus your budget.
That's the eternal struggle, isn't it? Usually when I have the money, I don't have the time. And when I have the time, I'm broke. This month seems determined to make sure I have neither.
It's certainly trying its best.
So here's the mission for this deep dive. We are going to navigate this minefield. We've got three main pillars. First, the return of a punishing combat franchise that's taking a huge
A
risk.
huge risk. They're changing their whole formula.
Then two absolute RPG classics that have been reimagined. And I mean really reimagined from the ground up.
And third, because we have to be realistic, we're going to look at the subscription updates and, the hardware rumors that might offer a different, maybe cheaper path through February.
All right, so put down the controller. Seriously, just pause the game for a bit. Let's figure out how we're all going to survive February 2026.
Let's do it.
I want to start right away with the first week. We don't even get a grace period. The forecast marks this as the champion of the first week. Neo 3, it's dropping this coming Friday, February 6th.
Big one. PlayStation 5 and PC.
Now, I've played the other Neo games. They're intense, very mission-based, level-based. You load in, you fight demons, you die a lot, you get out.
Yeah.
It's a tight loop.
A very tight loop.
But the notes here say Team Ninja is just throwing that out the window.
They are. And this is the part that has a lot of analysts and longtime fans just holding their breath. They're moving to a semi-open world structure.
See, that worries me.
Yeah.
Open world is such a buzzword. Usually it just means, like, now you have to ride a horse for 10 minutes just to get to the actual fight.
Yeah.
Neo's all about that split-second combat, the Kia pulses, the stance switching. Doesn't opening up the world just dilute that tension?
That is the risk, right? The dilution of intensity. But if you look closer at the mechanics they're bringing in, specifically this whole Crucible Realm idea, it looks like they might have found a workaround.
I saw that term, the Crucible Realm. It sounds like a death metal album, but what is it actually?
Think of it like a pocket dimension. The open world is for exploring, getting around, maybe some lighter fights. But the Crucible Realm is this horrifying alternate dimension you get pulled into. And because it's a separate instance, a separate area, the developers can push the graphics through the roof in there.
Oh, so they don't have to render the whole open world while you're fighting.
Exactly. It creates a contrast. You get the open exploration, and then bam, you're in these claustrophobic, high-fidelity arenas where the frame rate is locked and the visuals are pushed to the absolute limit.
I like that.
It's their way of keeping that tight, that Souls-like atmosphere without sacrificing the scale of a modern game.
Okay, that makes sense. It separates the journey from the duel.
Yeah.
But you mentioned frame rate, and I have to stop you there. We're talking about a Japanese action game releasing on PC on day one. Historically, that is a disaster waiting to happen.
It can be stuttering, shader compilation lag. It's usually a mess. You're not wrong. Japanese ports have a notorious reputation on PC. But that's why this specific detail in the report stands out so much. The optimization is being flagged as reportedly flawless.
Flawless. That is a very strong word.
It is. But for the person who isn't a tech wizard and just wants to play the game without spending 3 hours in forums, this is huge.
So true.
In a game like Neo, where a single dropped frame can make you miss a parry and lose an hour of progress, stability isn't a luxury, it's a core gameplay mechanic.
That's a really good point. If I die because I'm bad at the game, fine, I can accept that, I'll get better. But if I die because the game hitched, I'm putting a hole in my monitor.
Exactly. So knowing the technical side is solid makes this a much safer bet for February 6th. It's a test of your patience, not your PC hardware.
Okay, so Neo 3 is the challenge. It's the sweaty game of the month. But let's say I'm stressed at work. I don't want to be punished. I want a good story. I want to sink into a world, but I want it to feel modern. This brings us to the second pillar, the classics. But these aren't just ports, are they?
No, and I think even calling them remakes kind of sells them short. This is revitalization.
Let's talk about the big one first. February 12th, Yakuza Kiwami 3. Or I guess Like a Dragon, as we're supposed to call the series now.
This is a really significant release. I mean, for context, the original Yakuza 3 was an early PlayStation 3 game. And technically, it was always considered the rough entry.
Oh, yeah.
The combat was blocky. Enemies were just damaged sponges. It has not aged well.
So this isn't just a fresh coat of paint?
Not at all. They've rebuilt it from the ground up on the Dragon Engine.
Now, for listeners who maybe don't follow the engine wars, why does the Dragon Engine matter so much for Yakuza?
It's the physics. The Dragon Engine is all about ragdoll physics and object interaction. When you punch someone in the original, they just kind of fell over.
Right.
In the Dragon Engine, they go flying into a stack of bicycles. The bikes shatter. The neon sign above them falls down. It turns every fight into this chaotic, cinematic brawl.
And the setting, Okinawa. The notes mention 4K ray tracing. I feel like ray tracing gets thrown around a lot, but does it actually change the feel of a place like that?
Oh, in this case, yes. Definitely. Okinawa in the game is all about that seaside atmosphere. Yeah. You have wet pavement, bright sun, dense neon at night. Ray tracing isn't just making it shinier. Yeah. It's calculating how that neon light bounces off a puddle and reflects onto Kiryu's suit. It grounds the city, makes it feel like a real lived-in place, not just a video game map.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah.
But visuals are one thing. I'm looking at the content section here, and I see something called Dark Ties. Is this just like a new side quest they added?
It's more than that. It's a full expansion woven into the main story. And this is crucial because the original story in Yakuza 3 was always a bit disjointed.
Well, but yeah.
Dark Ties seems to be the narrative glue. It adds context to the whole orphanage subplot. It deepens the villain's motivations. It fixes things.
So even if I played Yakuza 3 back in 2009, I haven't played this game.
Exactly. You are not paying full price for a memory. You're getting a whole new narrative layer that just didn't exist before.
Okay, that justifies the price for me. But speaking of changes, we have to address the other giant in the room, the controversy. Dragon Quest VII Reimagined, dropping February 5th.
This one is maybe the most fascinating case study of the month for me.
The time factor.
Right.
I remember the original Dragon Quest VII. It was infamous. 100-hour trek. It took, what, 3 hours just to get to the first battle?
It was a lifestyle commitment. You didn't just play Dragon Quest VII. You lived it for, like, 3 months.
But the report says Square Enix has taken a chainsaw to that runtime. They've cut it down to a manageable 60 hours.
A 40% reduction.
Okay, I have to play devil's advocate. If I'm a purist or just a consumer looking for value, isn't cutting 40 hours of content a bad thing? Am I getting, you know, 60% of the game I paid for?
That's the knee-jerk reaction, right? Where's the rest of my game? But you have to look at what they cut. The original was just plagued with backtracking, excessive grinding, repeated assets.
So they trimmed the fat.
They performed major surgery. The source material really emphasizes that this was done without losing story depth, which tells me they just tightened the pacing.
How so?
Instead of fighting 50 slimes to level up for a boss, the curve is adjusted. Instead of walking back and forth across an island 3 times to trigger one cutscene, it just happens naturally.
So it's quality over quantity.
It's about respecting the adult player's time. And that is a huge shift for a franchise that is, let's be real, traditionally very conservative.
That's a great point.
They're acknowledging that their audience, the people who grew up with this, now have jobs and kids that can't do 100 hours of grinding anymore.
That's actually really refreshing. It's like they're saying, we want you to actually finish the game this time.
Exactly. And you combine that with the new visuals. The source says, Akira Toriyama's designs look stunning in the new engine. It just feels like the definitive version, even if it is technically shorter.
Okay, so we have Neo demanding our patience, Dragon Quest respecting our time. But now we got to talk about the thing that disrespects all of us, the cost.
Wallet.
We've just hyped up 3 massive games, Neo 3, Yakuza, Dragon Quest. If I go out and buy all 3 on release day, I am looking at, what, over $200? Plus tax.
Easily. And that brings us right back to the ramen for the rest of the month scenario.
Which, look, I love ramen, but I also like paying my electricity bill. So let's pivot. Segment 3, the budget-friendly option. If I refuse to spend $70 this month, am I just out of the loop?
Not at all. In fact, this is where the whole industry shift to subscriptions really pays off. You can sit out the new releases and still have a massive month of gaming.
Let's start with Sony, PS Plus Essential. What are they offering to distract us from Neo?
It's a really eclectic lineup. We've got Dead Island 2, Need for Speed Unbound, and Sonic Frontiers.
That is a weird mix. Zombies, street racing, and open zone Sonic.
It's weird, but it's strategic. It covers all the bases. You want mindless violence, Dead Island. If you want competitive driving, Need for Speed. If you want a platformer for the kids or, you know, yourself, Sonic.
So there's variety there without spending an extra dime.
Exactly.
And what about the other side? Microsoft and Game Pass.
Yeah.
Usually they drop a big day one title.
Their strategy is a bit different this month. They're not dropping a new game so much as they are dropping massive content updates for their ecosystem.
Oh.
The forecast highlights the Starfield, Shattered Space expansion, and a massive next-gen update for Fallout 4.
Fallout 4 again. That game is immortal. But why updates instead of new games? Is that a sign of a weak month for them?
I don't think so. It's a retention strategy. Think about it. If everyone is looking at Dragon Quest or Yakuza, Microsoft is saying, hey, remember that game you already own? It's better now. Come back.
Ah, right.
It costs you nothing, but it keeps you in their ecosystem.
That's smart. It plays on the whole sunk cost idea in a good way. I already have Starfield, so I might as well check out the new content.
Exactly. So the takeaway here is you don't have to buy the shiny new thing. The giants are still fighting for your time, even with the games you already have.
All right. We've covered the software. We've saved some money. But we need to zoom out a bit. There is something looming on the horizon that might just wreck our budgets later this year.
Hardware rumblings.
Segment 4, the Switch 2. We have been hearing rumors for literal years, but the source says it's reaching a fever pitch now. Why? What's different this time?
Specificity. We're not just hearing it's coming, we're hearing dates. The report suggests a special Nintendo Direct is happening later this month in February to finally unveil the thing.
Okay, unveiling is one thing.
Aye.
But when can I buy it? Because if it's coming out in March, my budget is toast.
You can breathe easy for now. The launch window is targeted for late 2026.
Late 2026. That seems late. Don't you want to hit that holiday window? Isn't that leaving the door open for somebody else?
It is. But Nintendo always plays by their own clock. And more importantly, it gives them time to build up stock. But the detail that really matters here is the spec sheet. The report points to performance levels comparable to the PS4 Pro.
PS4 Pro levels in a handheld. That sounds great, but my first thought is battery life. If you're pushing that kind of power, is this thing going to last like 45 minutes on a charge?
That's the big question mark. But the idea is that with DLSS tech and modern chips, they can hit that visual target more efficiently than a PS4 Pro ever could. But here's the most important spec. Backward compatibility.
Thank goodness. If they didn't include that, there'd be riots in the streets.
It's essential. It protects your library. But here's where it gets really interesting, and this is why I love doing these deep dives. We can connect the dots between our segments.
You mean connecting the Switch 2 rumors back to the games we just talked about?
Yes. Remember Yakuza Kiwami 3?
Right. The remake that's dropping on the 12th.
The source material explicitly confirms that Yakuza Kiwami 3 is confirmed for the Switch 2.
Uh-huh. So the software confirms the hardware.
Exactly. Sega wouldn't announce a game for a platform that doesn't exist or isn't finalized. And the fact that Yakuza, a graphically intense Dragon Engine game, is running on it, that validates the PS4 Pro power claims. It shows third-party devs already have the kits.
So even though we can't buy a Switch 2 in February, its shadow is kind of hanging over every release this month.
It's a transition month. We're playing the last great games of this cycle while we're looking at the roadmap for the next one.
Okay, that is a lot to digest. We've gone from demons and alternate dimensions to neon-soaked Okinawa to slashing 40 hours off an RPG to the future of handhelds.
It is a heavy month.
So if we have to boil this down for the listener who is standing in the store, or, you know, hovering over the buy button right now, What is the immediate choice?
It really comes down to your preferred flavor of conflict. It's a month of combat. Do you want the katana with Neo 3? Disciplined, punishing, technical. Do you want the fists with Yakuza? Brawling, chaotic, cinematic. Or do you want the magic with Dragon Quest? Classic, turn-based, but streamlined.
Katana, fists, or magic? I like that breakdown. But I want to add one more piece of advice because I'm looking at the notes here. You don't actually have to guess, do you?
No, and please don't guess with $70. The source makes a big point of this. Free demos are available now for all three of those major titles.
That is the best financial advice we can possibly give. Download the demo. Go see if the Crucible Realm in Neo is too hard or just right. Go see if the new Dragon Quest feels too fast or perfectly paced.
It's the only way to know if a game respects your time and your taste before you actually open your wallet.
Absolutely. Now, before we sign off, I want to leave everyone with one final thought, something to chew on while you're waiting for those demos to download.
Sure, it's on your mind.
We talked about Dragon Quest cutting 40 hours to be manageable. We talked about Neo changing its rigid structure to an open world to be more modern. It feels like a tipping point. For the last, 10 years? The trend in gaming has been more. More hours, bigger maps, endless content. If it's not 200 hours, it's not worth it.
The content is king era.
Exactly. But now, we're seeing developers actively shrinking games or opening them up to let us choose our own pace. Are we finally seeing the industry realize that our time is the most valuable resource we have?
Mm-hmm.
Are they finally adapting the games to fit our lives instead of forcing us to adapt our lives to fit the games?
That is a profound shift. Moving from content is king to time is king.
I think we might be there. And honestly, it's about time.
I couldn't agree more.
Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive. Good luck with your wallets this month, and we'll catch you in the next one.